Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up. Welcome to episode 386 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where, hey, whatever, man, nothing really matters. Podcast, no podcast, whatever. Just let it go. I mean, look at this microphone. Freaking weird, man. Am I right? I'm Kier.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Jay. And this week, we narrowly avoid materializing right in the middle of another podcast as we explore the crystallized recordings of Season 17's Nightmare of Eden. Effects were attempted, a statement about drug trafficking was made, rubber monsters were zapped. Repeatedly, it was a story.
Yeah, that's a baby. we would typically give some sort of a preamble about how this has been or has not been critically received. I don't even want to broach that because we're just going to rest entirely on our own reactions here. So, Jay, right off the cuff, you went through four episodes of Nightmare of Eden.
Yes, I did.
What was your walk away?
It wasn't the back and forth, this person's in control now and this person's not, that mm-hmm. we previously have gotten a bunch with the four parts. So I'm detecting a trend where we have a continual story that's not just back and forth power grabs. And I kind of liked that.
Okay, that's absolutely valid. Haley, when the final credits rolled after part four, what did you push back feeling?
So you know how a lot of times I say there's six-part stories that should be four parts? Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a four-part story that could have been two.
Oh, that little as far as overall content.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, we had the first episode set up, and then we treaded water for two and three, and then we finally get some rubber monsters in the fourth part. And I'm like, we could have used more rubber monsters.
Mm. I will say that does kind of track. There was a whole lot of, well, what should we do? Well, we should get the ships apart. Well, we've been saying that for three episodes. Why haven't we tried it yet?
All right. Let's dive a little deeper and see exactly where the story accomplishes what Bob Baker set out for it to do and where it may have fallen a little short.
How did you know we could get into the projection?
Well, the same way I knew we could get into the TARDIS. Tris doesn't realize what he stumbled on. At least I don't think he has.
A relative dimensional field?
Yes. All this is recorded on laser crystal. When it's played back,
it's restructured on an interdimensional matrix.
Yes, well, roughly speaking.
So without the dimensional osmosis damper, everything gets mixed up together and we can just walk straight into the projection?
Yes.
And anything else can just walk straight out?
Yes.
I've never met such idiots as those customs men.
Idiots? They're worse than idiots. They're bureaucrats. They just exist. Tangle people up. Wrap them round and round in red tape until they can't move. Romana?
Yes?
I can't move.
At the surface, this is a crime story, right? This is like a detective kind of... let's get to the bottom of this. Not really law and order, because there's no real order established other than, well, there really is valid. No order established. But would you expect or want this kind of approach to come into a Doctor Who storyline?
Like the investigating a crime kind of thing? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, as opposed to a whodunit. We've done lots of whodunits. You know, those are always fun. The sort of the murder mysteries, the find the body, figure out what the baddie is, and then find the bigger baddie who was hiding behind the baddie we were chasing all along. But this is a matter of, oh, no, there's clearly a problem here. There's a crime that is being committed, and there may or may not be players among the cast who we've met who are in some way involved. So it's a different sort of detective tact, but it's taking something that that really, on a lot of levels, has absolutely nothing to do with science fiction, other than the fact that they gave it a kind of a sci-fi name to the drug.
Yeah, I feel like we have seen stories like this done better. You know, we've had like some heist stories, and we've had, I don't know, like criminal exploitation of some sort of alien thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the story can be done well. It just wasn't.
All right. Jay, do you track with that?
You know, it was an interesting concept at first. Like when they first started, I was like, oh, this is kind of different. Let's see. And then it turned into just a straight up like, hey, we've got something to say about drug trafficking. And it really didn't go much deeper than that.
Mm.
And so it was, I like the fact that it was kind of held until late in the game that Professor Trist, you know, like he was, you first encounter him and you're kind of like, all right, well, I suspect this guy's going to be evil, and oh, well, he's just a quirky scientist guy. Okay. Maybe he's not the, oh no, wait, he was evil. You know, so it's like, I feel like they accomplished that, like that was handled as well as it could have been given the depth of everything else in the story. But the, you know, Keystone Cops showing up and just automatically going after the doctor just added way more frustration than needed to be.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that in a second as far as just the total headcount for supporting cast here. But as far as we've relied on enjoyable Baker and Martin written stories through the years, always working as the duo. This is Baker working without Martin in this particular instance.
And he forgot to write half the stories?
Yeah, maybe that was it. Or it was a matter of sort of tempering the balance between the quippy dialogue and just a matter of saying, you know what, maybe there are too many people in this scene, or maybe we should have given some indication that there was some extra technology and the threat of monsters a little earlier in the reveals, or something like that. Just that fresh set of eyes, you know. There were a lot of issues with this particular production, and this may have actually led to a lot of changing of the guard as far as exhaustion points with trying to work with a director who was apparently historically very difficult to work with and to satisfy. And so he was canned halfway through the production of this. Tells you anything. So, but the idea of like, you've got this crime story, you've got this clear instance where these drugs are starting to make it onto one and or the other ships. And then all of a sudden, as is very often the case, there's this sci-fi aspect that's thrown into it. We've got Tristan Della who are working on this crystallized electronic transfer thing, the CET, or don't even have the acronym right, but it doesn't really matter. This electronic zoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I liked the premise of it. And I like the fact that, oh, there's more to it than even the doctors, you know, Romana and the doctor are making fun of him saying, oh, it's so primitive and how it's doing its dimensional representations and stuff. And you knew that had, okay, this is the stuff that we like Baker and Martin stories about. But then all of a sudden they keep stumbling for these things. And I think one of the real issues, Jay, as you were saying, as you were kind of referring to them as the Keystone Cops, is there's just way too many players in the mix here. And I started trying to itemize them all. And it was like, it was almost as if you were trying to give everybody a second tier of somebody to interact with. No matter where you pointed a finger at one of the principal supporting cast who were there to move the plot, there was somebody else standing behind them who didn't really need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The captain had some of his subordinates. Thankfully, some of them died. Trist had Della, who I didn't really have much of a Della. She's kind of a weak character. She was not written very. But then even behind Della, you've got Stott. You've got Dimond, thankfully there was, Dimond was working alone on his ship. Dimond had, had a ship that was 20 times larger than the one that, that crashed into it, and yet he's working solo. He's the only person representing that ship.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought was his it? Was the small one.
The fact that wasn't even clear to me tells me that we've got some problems.
Exactly.
Oh, and then to say nothing, you talk about all the feds, all the cops running around. Don't even bring up the fact that you've got 40, 50, 60 some odd extras playing people sitting down in the decks that just reminded me of like all the passengers on WALL-E in the large ship.
given what is going on in the world right now, and the difficulty we have with just getting people to wear a mask on their face, there's no way in hell you could get that many people all wearing the same sunglasses and safety coveralls or whatever.
There should have definitely been one guy in his seat with like it just hanging off of his head like, I'm wearing it, what?
It's and a red cap.
And I think those suits were, this may be a little early for when it started to come into vogue, but for a little while, you could buy in fitness stores sweat suits.
Yes.
That were just meant to basically just trap all of your funk inside and make you sweat the fat away. And that's what those things reminded me of. So just give yourself 60, 70, 80 of these people trapped in the cargo hold or whatever. Say, oh, I wonder if this is the in-ship entertainment. One of the best lines in the entire thing, hands down. Okay, so just way too many people in here.
They're packed in like sardines, but Trist has a room the same size as they're packed into just for himself. That's fine.
Well, he needed it because he had that big display area to be able to walk into all of his little dial-a-climate things.
Well, I will say at one point when Romana was either going into or out of the scene, like it's, I mean, maybe I just got like really into the, you know, like I'm used to Classic Who and kind of dialing my brain back or something, but she like, I think she comes running out of the scene and hops over the frame. And I was like, oh, that was really cool. How did they do that? Oh, right. It's just another room on the thing. But it was like for half a second there, I was like, oh, that was really cool.
There was when she jumped into Eden.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, and the lighting changes. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So they're actually paying attention to this one. All right. Nicely done. For the longest time, as the big reveal about who the smugglers were and everything, I was really tripping over the whole how the handoff was really supposed to happen. Because the circumstances that went into this thing, maybe this is just a testament to Dimond for keeping his cool, but these two ships materialized into one another.
Yes.
And I'm guessing that, as a reveal goes, the way this drug handoff was supposed to happen, this Inchuka laser that they bring in at the 11th hour to mention this thing, was supposed to be the way to actually transfer the drugs from ship to ship. Am I right?
Yeah.
This is a story. I will I think admit, so. This is a story I've only seen twice. This was the second time I've sat through this thing. And I liked this season, but I kept avoiding it.
I like how he phrases sat through this.
Yeah. I folded a lot of laundry.
Yeah.
But this this Inchuka laser thing, because they go through a sort of a techno babble breakdown, you know, eats up a good 3.5 minutes of screen time, which by Baker's standards is pretty solid. Talking about the fact that it can be used to transfer material through whatever the this laser beam. This is all new levels of techno babble and sciency wyancy. But if that was the intended means, like get the ships to just pass, because right at the beginning, right, think back episode one, they were just a couple of degrees off their intended trajectory. So these ships were literally supposed to be like passing in the night. So I'm putting two and two together here, and it's supposed to mean that maybe Trist is supposed to just kind of beam some of the drugs over as they're passing by. Hey, how you doing? By the way, boop, here's a bunch of drug crystals. Enjoy. I got to go back to, you know, electrocuting more monsters. But if that's the case, then when this thing happens and these two ships get locked together as they are and the doctor's trying to just be the helpful guy and help them throw both of their cars into reverse to sort of get their bumpers unhitched. Mm-hmm. I would think that Dimon would be losing his mind. Now, he's just talking about his contract.
Yeah.
So kudos, or I don't know whether to compliment the actor for playing it the way he did, or take a dig at the writing for not writing him more accurately. Anybody else on that?
No, it definitely did seem kind of like a curveball at the end. Just kind of like, it's like, oh, and he was helping. Like, he was? Okay.
Like, he just wanted to leave.
Yeah. Which I didn't put much thought into the retrospective, you know, like, well, did it actually fit? It was just kind of my knee-jerk reaction in the moment, and then I moved on.
Mm. You got to know, that's the way that I typically consume these stories, is that the first time I go through, and the same thing happens when new seasons are airing and things, as we all have said, you know, first time through is always the shiny, right?
Just
love for what it is. Second time through, you start saying, wait a second. And the third time, you're just picking apart the technical aspects. Because at that point, you're like, I can see the shadow of the guy holding the boom mic or whatever.
Right, yeah.
In this particular case, there actually was a scene where they're standing in the corridor and they're having a conversation, and you can see that there are people off screen who are moving around throwing shadows up and down the hallway. Oh, wow.
Oh, it's the other passengers. That's when they got up and moved around.
I thought the bathroom was down here. There apparently was a big transition. This is one of the things that actually irked a lot of the technical staff, that they went from shooting some of their modeling effects, specifically all these ship scenes, from doing it on film and then doing a lot of the color separation overlay and things like that, and moving it over to video for cost. Mm-hmm. Did you notice any sort of a difference as far as like a step back on the quality of the effects?
Oh, yeah. You definitely were like, yep, no, that's a... That is a model right there that somebody is clearly either holding it from off screen. Like, I mean, you could see like the little bit of shake. It just, it definitely did look like it was very cheaply done.
Right. And just some of the graininess that you get with the video, which they tried to hide at certain points when they're like coming into the corridors and they're literally looking at the side of the ship that has cleaved through the corridor. The best they could do is just sort of do it as a quick, you know, video overlay sort of thing. Unfortunate. I didn't bring this up before, but are you coming around on the change of the canine voice?
No.
Okay. Nope. Still not.
Seemed like Haley. He talked less this time, though.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I don't know if the overall dialogue was any more or less, but I think the interactions were a lot more clipped as far as just ask a question, answer a question. There really wasn't banter, which we were starting to get from John Leeson's canine in the last few stories. I don't know. All in all, it's like I don't think I got anything really exemplary from any of our key cast. Like, this is definitely, in my opinion, not a strong Tom Baker story. He's not given enough to really play with and have a lot of fun with. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have any scenes where he's really, really riffing or things like that, and Lala Ward as Romana is not really having a lot of, you know, she gets some of her digs in every once in a while and sort of enjoys being able to build off of Baker's energy. I know the entire cast was miserable, as historical records tell us, you know, as we've learned through studying tapestries, that the entire production was just a horror show because everyone was really at odds with the director. But man, it really creeped into the production and the quality of their performances too, I think.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like there was a lot less heart in this one than some of the other ones from this season. So
yeah, get my paycheck and get out.
Yeah.
Also, I hated Romana's costume for this episode so much. What was that thing?
I don't know. It was a sack.
Like a gray, too big for her house coat that they kind of sewed into a dress.
Dress only insofar as it had multiple openings at the top and one opening at the bottom. That's the only way I can categorize it as a dress. So, I mean, I guess we try to find positives on this, and I guess you can. There might be some moments in the dialogue that you can say that, you know, that's kind of interesting or kind of fun. And the watching Tom Baker bite the vine of a of a rather graphic plant monster had its merits, I suppose. But all in all, where would you stand on the rewatchability? I won't even bother with recommendations because I don't think this is one that any of us would say, you know what, you gotta see Nightmare. But just from a rewatch perspective, is this something that you'd even give half a mind to other than the laundry watching?
No. I don't see myself ever going back to visit this one.
No. Okay. Completionists only.
Yeah. And now that I've got it under the belt, I can move on.
Same. Like, I don't have that much laundry to fold. So, no. I have laundry to fold, but not that much.
Right. She doesn't have the never-ending pile of children's laundry that Kira and I have to deal with. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Get you there.
Fortunately, though, I mean, because this is what, the fourth story of season 17? So you've got the Horns of Nymon coming up next. So at least that does have a pickup, but we'll get around. Yeah, so there you have it. I mean, it's as we said at the beginning, it's a story. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have glaring errors. It's not one that makes me push back and say, you stole 88 minutes of my life that I want back or something like that. But it's not a gem. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. All right. We ready to jump into the news?
Yeah, let's bang through this. All right. So, hey, good news. Long Island Who is going to be back, I guess. Let's qualify that. It's 2021. So
that's fine, because the world is closed for the rest of the year anyway.
Right. If you were trying to actually hold out and make convention plans for this year, shame on you. But yes, the powers that be, Ken and Company, made the decision that it is just absolutely not something that we can consider for this year. Despite the fact that this is going to be held in New York, where they are doing one of the most exemplary jobs of flattening the curve as it currently stands, there is no guarantee that something like this is going to be safe for anyone to attend in any capacity that would allow you to actually enjoy a convention in what you've come to expect. So absolutely understand the decision. We'll prepare for things accordingly. Still don't know. This was this past week. The hotel blocks went back up for Gallifrey 1 for February of 2021. And even that has a bunch of people saying, is this really going to be a thing? I know a lot of major conventions, you're talking like multiple tens of thousands in attendance, like Dragon Con and that sort of thing, that are coming up like within months, that don't even know whether they are going to pull the plug on it, because the only thing that they can do by their contracts to be able to actually refund people has to be a force majeure. And that's, unless the state that they're holding the event in is quantifying it as such, they don't have any recourse to be able to actually shut these events down. Which it's just bizarre to me. How could, when you're actually forced to keep an event going, that's nuts. But hey, Georgia.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, but at least as it comes to when it comes to LI Who, as far as timetables, you know, as I watch and see what we're expecting for development of and distribution of vaccines and things like that, November of 21 seems to be on the much safer side of the coin than November of 2020. I'm still going to be hiding in my basement November 2020, but that's just me. I like my basement. I'm in my basement right now.
You're in one of those happy, over-the-hump states. I'm in the wild, wild west where it's like, we're not doing anything about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Phoenix has to be an absolute carnival right now.
There's a lot of rednecks wearing their masks under their chin in the stores. That's where we're at right now.
Right. Well, something you can do to while the hours away as you're hiding in your bunker from all of your neighbors who don't seem to understand what the idea of pandemic means is play a game that we used to call 2048. I've been playing this game on planes. Remember planes? We used to ride on planes. It used to be my go-to in-flight game, where it was just sliding tiles kind of thing, and you combine multiples of two, factors of two, to get to the highest possible number. And it was tons of fun, and I enjoyed it because it was mindless. Well, BBC decided to put it all together and make a game where you actually have to stack up iterations of the Doctor in order to get up to regenerations. So you stack your, you know, combine your first Doctors, you get a second Doctor. Combine a couple of second Doctors, you get a third Doctor, and on and on and on. Well, I started playing this thing, and about 4 hours later, I realized I was supposed to be doing some work. But it's tough. The 2048 game was originally intended to get yourselves, like, you know, you work up, do your factors of two. For those of you who really know your maths, figure how many multiples of two, how many factors you need to combine to get yourself to the number 2048. That was like a benchmark goal in the game. I'm not even going to do it off the top of my head because I can't. But it was, whatever, it was like a dozen or so. Maybe a dozen. Maybe. Two to the power of 12? I don't know. Haley, do you know maths? I can't do maths.
Yeah, but I got to count on my finger a second.
All right. We'll edit this fun part out. This is Haley counting on her.
I think it's the 11th power. 2 to the 11th, I think it's.
Okay. All right. And I'll take you on faith on that. So you would say, okay, well, I got to get to the 13th Doctor. So that's like playing a game of 2048 and just going a couple extra steps. So 2048, 4096, and then whatever the heck comes after that. I can't remember. Whatever. You know, I only did programming years. I should know these things, but whatever. So, but the thing that throws you is the War Doctor, that jerk. Because you get to the 8th Doctor and you're like, oh, I'm doing great. And then the War Doctor comes in. You're like, ah, damn it. This is actually getting to the 13th Doctor takes me to the 14th power. I haven't gotten there yet. And I already apologized to my boss.
What about the Ruth Doctor and all the people we saw in The Timeless Child?
I haven't gotten there yet. I don't know. Although I do know somebody, because the way the game is being described to people is like, you know, can you get to the 13th Doctor? So I don't know if anyone, I have yet to see anyone who's posted like, yeah, I got the 13th Doctor and the game shut down. Or I got the 13th Doctor and I kept going. Maybe that's the way they're going to announce the 14th Doctor. Just maybe. Watch and see who pops up. Idris Elba. No. all right. Speaking of games. This is interesting. I am very intrigued at the way they decided to roll this out, and I give them all the credit in the world for attempting this pivot, but I don't know if this is going to help them monetarily recover some of their losses on this. I know this is a long time in the coming. There's a group out there called Escape Hunt. Yeah, Escape Hunt UK. I had first heard about them back in January of 2019. You remember the heady days of 2019? When everything was just a bit of political news and us just couldn't wait until election day of 2020. Anyway, so they were working on an escape room, obviously, as the name implies, that was going to be Whovian-based. And this caught our attention. You know, they had actually tweeted out to us and asked us if we wanted to come, you know, do an evaluation of it. And we said, hey, do you realize that we actually record this in the United States and we can't fly out there, but if you want to pay for it. We'll be more than happy to.
We're happy to travel on your dime.
Yeah, they didn't return that tweet. But so they were going to be doing this thing. They had this plan in the works for a while to do this escape room theme that had to do with working for at Cybus Industries, the Cybermen, right? This is going to be really cool. And you had to go through and figure out how to stop the upgrade invasion and all of this stuff. And then the pandemic hit. And escape rooms aren't exactly the place where you want to be right now.
Right.
So they figured out a way to do it differently, where you actually do it through a Zoom call and you guide a single person through. They are your eyes, ears, and hands to go through this room. And I'm digging this idea. What's that?
I said interesting.
Yeah, right? I don't know if they're just going to be wearing like a head-mounted camera, like just put a GoPro on their head and a set of headphones or something and go at it that way. I would imagine it's got to be something to that degree because you have to ask them. You're apparently communicating with this representative, this person who's going to be your technician, and you have to guide them through the room. And so you schedule a Zoom call. I would assume that this costs, you know, somewhat similar to what it would be to actually do one of these escape rooms. And you and some friends, a limited number, just like when you do an escape room, you've got however many people, four people, six people, to suss out the room. There's a couple of things here that I wonder about. And one is a technical issue, and one has to do with the fact that we've been talking about this Time Lord Victorious thing. I didn't see in the couple of articles mentioning this whether this had anything to do with that integrated storyline thing that was supposed to be happening with escape rooms and books and comics and Big Finish and all this stuff. So the fact that it wasn't mentioned makes me wonder if this was just a kind of a side project. This has been in the works for a year and a half now. So I honestly don't know. Maybe it is, and just they're waiting to make sort of the official announcement. This came to me through some sort of a gaming platform blog thing. So it just didn't think to mention that sort of integration. But the technical aspect is, Haley, have you ever done escape rooms?
Yes, I've done one with you before.
Right. This was a setup question.
Oh, okay. Yes, I've done many.
Okay. Now, what was the smallest group of people you've ever done a room with?
Two.
Two. Oh, okay. Wow, I've never done one with two. That's going to be interesting. And the largest I've ever done one with was, in a single room, was eight, I think. Maybe eight?
I think I've done one with around 10.
Ooh, okay.
Well, but I mean, at that point, there's at least four people that are doing
it. Okay, all right, and that gets to my point. So it didn't mention in here what some of the recommended group sizes were, but you're only guiding a single person through this. Most of these rooms are designed, and the reason why they say you have to have a minimum of two or four or six or whatever the number is because some things are expected to kind of happen concurrently, right? One person's looking at this thing and trying to figure it out, or someone is calling out, hey, look around the room and try to find something that fits this knob or whatever. And there's this collaborative effort where you've got eyes on multiple things at once. The way they've got this structured, you've got one person you're guiding and you got to sit there with a notepad, which you normally don't get when you're in one of these rooms, to try and guide them through it. Logistically, this is going to be a much different experience. I don't know. I'd really love to hear from somebody who actually does this after it's all done. If there's anybody who's actually thinking about dropping a dime or however much this is going to cost to try this thing out, I would absolutely love to hear your experiences specifically with that regard about what it's like trying to guide a person through a room alone where you can only look at one thing at a time and only listen to and interact with a single thing at a time, because that's got to slow you. As far as this article says, you still only have like 60 minutes. So
I've done a few different kinds of rooms. There's the kind you talk about where it's like you're working on multiple things at a time, and then at some point they kind of converge into solving the final puzzle. Mm-hmm. I've also done rooms that are a little more sequential. So it's like you solve one puzzle and then that leads you to the next and that leads you to the next.
Okay.
I wonder if it's more of that kind of puzzle or that kind of room.
Right.
And then also, usually when you do these rooms, there's some sort of operator that's there that helps you along the way.
Sure.
So, like, sometimes something just doesn't work, like you're doing it right and it's not working like it's supposed to, and they'll just like, yes, you got that. Or they give you hints along the way. So yeah. I think the person you're controlling is obviously doubling as the operator.
Right.
For you.
For sure.
So
for sure.
It could be a thing where, you know, there are times where you're guiding them and there's times where it's like, okay, now let me move on to the next part.
Mm. I don't know. All the more reason why I'd love to get some first person reactions from how this actually functions. Because
I'm thinking we both are capable of being on a Zoom call. I'm sure Jay could handle that as well.
He's done a few. Yep. Yep, I know for a fact he's done a few of varying complexity and theme and head counts. So he's familiar with working with small groups and large, sort of saying, all right, you're clearly going to be the dead weight in this room. So I'm going to let you go over here and figure out how to fit this key into this keyhole while I go actually solve the puzzle. Maybe we'll have to do this. I'll reach back out to them and ask them if they want a spoiler-free review.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll see how that pans out. But thankfully, it's been a little bit of a quiet news week overall. I mean, if these are the kind of things that we're discussing, we will hope to hear a little bit more about. I believe there's going to be some grumblings or some advancements on our holiday episode upcoming because of something that the effects team has been finalizing. This is aside from just showing us a picture of a CrossFit Dalek. That's a totally different, you know, they're so buff. But yeah, so we'll see what happens.
I'm Andrew from the Dad.io podcast. Life supplies the inputs and we supply the outputs. part of the Going to Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other fantastic and amazing geeky shows at goingtogeeknetwork.com.
So next week, we're going to be coming back with Torchwood, jumping into the episode 2 from season 2, Sleeper.
Right. So as it implies, the sleeper agent, that's that one where you've got the only person who comes out unscathed from this crime scene with all these multiple murders, and Jack thinks there's something else going on. So, yeah, season 2, yep. Staying strong.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been episode 386 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, interfere? Of course we should interfere. Always do what you're best at. That's what I say. Now, come on.
And this is Kier saying, 2021, I'll never do it.
And this is Haley saying, have a jelly baby. Don't forget to brush your teeth.
We'll see you guys next week.
I'm Lizzie.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going? You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2020. See you next week.